Hello, this is Judy, and for the next hour, I will be reading selected articles from the November 3rd, 2025 issue of the Toronto Star on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. I will do my best to pronounce all names and information correctly, yet please forgive me if I do not. The first article is titled, "These Patients Have a Family Doctor, But They're Hours Away: The Hidden Health Care Struggle for Thousands in Ontario." A study of 10 million Ontarians measured how geographical distance between family doctors and their patients might affect quality of care. And there's a picture of all these people lining up, and it's underneath the caption states, "Hundreds of people line up outside the Walkerton Legion Hall in January to sign up for a family doctor who is opening a practice in the town of Southwestern Ontario." A new study in the Canadian Medical Association Journal looks at the effects of distance from a family doctor. And that photo and caption was by Steve Russell of the Toronto Star. This article was written by Megan Ogilvie, Ogilvie, health reporter. When Dr. Archana Gupta, Archana Gupta, joined at Toronto Family Health in 2022, she was surprised by how many patients live far away from the downtown clinic. Some were making the trek from the GTA or the Niagara region, while others lived in Collingwood, Sorina, or even Ottawa, a 5-hour drive. Curious, Gupta asked her patients why they had chosen to stick with a Toronto doctor after moving away from the city. For some, remaining with the clinic that had overseen their care for years felt like the best choice, but many of the long-distance patients said they had no other option. In quotes, "They couldn't find a doctor locally, so they wanted to stay attached to me," said Gupta, a family doctor at St. Michael's Hospital. In quotes, "Because having someone far away was better than having no one at all." Those patient conversations sparked a research idea for Gupta, who wanted to know how many Ontario patients live far from their family physician. In 2023, she and her research colleagues launched a study of nearly 10 million Ontarians to investigate how geographical distance between family doctors and their patients might affect quality of care. The findings, published Monday in the CMAJ, which is a Canadian Medical Association journal, found that 13% of Ontarians attached to a family doctor live more than 30 kilometers away from their physician. The study also found that these patients were more likely to use the emergency department for non-urgent reasons and to have fewer family doctor visits and were less likely to have preventative screening for cancer. Gupta said the research confirms what many doctors see in their own practices and points to a problem. In quotes, "When we talk about the primary care crisis, we often focus on patients who don't have a family doctor," said Gupta, the study's lead author and scientist at Upstream Lab at St. Mike's, a part of Unity Health Toronto. In quotes, "But we looked at the nearly 10 million patients who do not have a family doctor, and they're still struggling to get care." The Ford government last year committed to fixing the family doctor crisis that has led to more than 2 million people in Ontario lacking access to primary care. Through its $2.1 billion Primary Care Action Plan, the government had said that every Ontarian will be connected to a family doctor or primary care team by 2029 and brought in Dr. Jane Philpott, Philpott, the former federal Liberal health minister, to lead the initiative. In her 2020 book, quotes, "Health for All," Philpott outlines a vision that guarantees primary care for everyone based on their postal code, similar to how students are assigned to a local public school based on their home address. The province had said its primary care plan includes creating and expanding hundreds of new family health teams, enhancing digital tools for doctors and patients, and opening new medical schools and teaching clinics to boost the family physician workforce. Dr. Jobin Varughese, Varughese, president of the Ontario College of Family Physicians, said family doctors welcome the province's commitment to primary care reform. But along with connecting people to a doctor, he said the province must also build a system that ensures those who have physicians can access them quickly and easily. In quotes, "We need to get to a place where everybody has care closer to home," said Vera Gies, a family doctor and interim assistant dean of primary care education within the School of Medicine at TMU. He said the new study highlights what many family physicians already know, that patients would rather travel to keep their doctor than risk languishing on a wait list in a new city. One of Varughese's own patients lives in Sturgeon Falls, a township in northeastern Ontario, 400 kilometers north of Toronto. Varughese said while he's happy to provide care, he has suggested the patient find a doctor closer to home. In quotes, he said, "I've been trying," Varughese said, adding that this patient, who has multiple chronic medical conditions, travels to Toronto every few months for coordinated appointments at the family health team. He was able to maximize his travel, but it's not a fix. In quotes, "No patient should have to cross the province to see their family physician." Varughese said that the coordinating care for patients, such as diagnostic imaging or referrals to specialists, is more challenging and time-consuming for doctors when their patients live in different cities or regions. He also pointed to previous research showing that poor access to primary care can lead to worse health outcomes, such as undetected cancers or chronic diseases that go unmanaged. Gupta said the new study found that those patients who live farther than 30 kilometers from their family doctor, more than 1 in 10 patients in urban or suburban regions, according to the findings, were more likely to be a newcomer to Ontario or live in a low-income neighborhood. She said the study authors hope the government will use the research to inform the province's primary care action plan. Meredith Vanstone, Vanstone, a professor in the Department of Family Medicine at McMaster University, said the study underscores a key component of primary care reform, that attaching patients to a doctor doesn't necessarily mean patients can access the doctor. While the study looks at geographical distance, Vanstone said access can also mean things like how quickly patients can book appointments, whether office hours align with the patient's work schedules, or whether the doctor can accommodate a patient's linguistic or cultural needs. In quotes, "All of these different things might disrupt somebody's access to good, high-quality primary care, even when they're attached to a family physician or to a nurse practitioner," said Vanstone, a Canada research chair in ethical complexity in primary care. "This study is a really clear example of how we need to consider both attachment and access when we make sure our system lives up to the promise of delivering high-quality primary care." Megan Ogilvy is a Toronto-based healthcare reporter for The Star. You can reach her via email at mogilvie@thestar.ca. The next article is titled, "We Should Still Have the Parade. Blue Jays' Heartfelt Run Leaves Fans Proud Despite World Series Loss." While the outcome wasn't what the city had hoped for, the disappointment of falling short couldn't take away the fans' pride in the Blue Jays. And there's a picture on Sunday morning of various fans and people in line. And the caption says, "On Sunday morning, still reeling from the Blue Jays' 5-4 loss to the Dodgers, fans quietly wandered the Jays' shop, clutching jerseys and hats as keepsakes from a season that had captured their hearts. This article is by Estella Wren, R-E-N, business reporter. A hush fell over Toronto on Sunday as the city reeled from the Blue Jays World Series heartbreak. Rogers Centre, which thrummed with cheers and was awash with tears Saturday night, now stands empty, like a fleeting dream. Yet one corner of the stadium still hums with life, the Jays shop. Along with many Jays fans, Marie Brennan, B-R-E-N-N-A-N, who traveled from Kingston, Ontario to watch the Jays compete for their first World Series championship in 32 years at Rogers Centre, returned the next morning with her husband to grab a few keepsakes from a season that united Canadians. And there's a picture of a fan, and then the caption says, "The Los Angeles Dodgers silenced a raucous crowd at Rogers Centre by beating the Toronto Blue Jays 5-4 in extra innings to win the World Series in 7 games. Blue Jays fans were left stunned after Miguel Rojas tied it with a 4-4 with a 9th-inning home run before Dodgers catcher Will Smith delivered the go-ahead blast in the 11th. And that photo is by the Canadian Press. In quotes, "To be honest, we're still in shock," Brennan said. In quotes, "It's very hard to believe. First time I've experienced something like that with 45,000 other people. It was a lot." Brennan recalled how the entire stadium felt silent when the Dodgers turned a double play to win the World Series title. Some fans remained seated for a long time, unable to move, until they watched the Dodgers take their place on the podium. In quotes, "It was very difficult to know that that was happening in our stadium, on our baseball diamond, and it wasn't for us," she said. While the outcome wasn't what the city had hoped for, the disappointment of falling short couldn't take away the fans' pride in the Blue Jays and how hard the team had fought. On Sunday morning, fans were already asking why a parade couldn't happen despite a loss. An online petition with over 300 signatures called on the city to hold a celebration at Nathan Phillips Square, giving Blue Jays fans one last chance to thank the team before the off-season. The City of Toronto did not respond to the Star's request for comment on whether a parade will be held by the time of publication. And then there's a picture of another fan. It's Kyle Gordon. He has some Blue Jays merch, and it says, in quotes, "They gave it everything they had," said 40-year-old Kyle Gordon, who flew in from Alberta to watch the game. "I just wanted them to win so bad." And Estella Wren took that picture. In quotes, "I think proud is an understatement. What they did, what they gave to the game, was remarkable for so many reasons," Brennan said. "We should still have a parade. Let's have the parade and say thank you to them." Kyle Gordon, 40, who spent $2,000 on a Game 7 ticket and flew in from Alberta on Saturday afternoon, said he'd be there to cheer if the Jays parade takes place. Just like last night, he joined other fans in the stadium chanting, "Let's go Blue Jays!" even as the Dodgers stormed the field in victory, hoping the crestfallen Jays could hear them. In quotes, "In my opinion, we have the best fans in the world. This would have been nice to celebrate," he said. Gordon, clutching an Ernie Clement number 22 jersey at the Jays shop, said Clement is his favorite player because, in quotes, "he kind of represents what people in Canada are like, hardworking and never give up." That's also how Gordon feels about the entire Blue Jays team this year. "I was just so pumped up because the team started off really struggling," he said, in quotes. "The team just battled all year. When they got down, they worked their way back up. It was like having a roller coaster all year." And then the next photo, there's a picture, and it's Michelle Johnson, and the caption says, "I feel sad and deflated, but at the same time, it was more of a feeling for them. We are sad for the players," said Michelle Johnson, a 53-year-old lifelong fan, Jays fan living in Port Perry. And her picture, her merch she bought is of George Springer. The spirit shown by the Blue Jays this season also turned Nauru Sakori, Sakurai, and his wife Kaori, K-A-O-R-I, both from Japan, into recent converts of the Toronto team. So Corey, who was shopping for jerseys and hats with, in quotes, World Series on them, said he roots for Shohei Ohtani, O-H-T-A-N-I, and Yoshobi Yamamoto, Yamamoto, as a proud Japanese. In quotes, "But for the team, we love the Blue Jays," Shikori said. In quotes, "They have great teamwork. They love each other." Michelle Johnson, a 53-year-old lifelong Blue Jays fan, said she felt sad and deflated watching the game at her in-law's house last night, more for the players than herself. The emotions hit her again when she rushed to the Blue Jays shop to grab George Springer's jersey on Sunday morning and saw how calm it was in there. "It's hard to see Geronimo and all of them so sad at the end," Johnson said. "We're all so proud of them. They really, really gave it their all. They couldn't have tried harder." Asked if she has faith in the team next season, Johnson said, "Absolutely, 100%. There's always next year. They are a good team." Estella Wren is a Toronto-based business reporter for The Star. You can reach her via email. It's E-R-E-N at symbol thestar.ca. You are listening to a reading of articles and features from the Toronto Star on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. The next article is, "Majority of Canadians say immigration level still too high, but confidence growing in Carney fixing broken system poll." Overall, 38% of Canadians favored the Conservatives to stick handle this issue, compared to 29% for the Liberals, an Abascus data survey found. And there's a picture, it's a photograph, and it's Mark Carney is in one picture, and Pierre Poilievre's is on the other picture. And underneath the caption says, "Mark Carney's Liberals are closing the gap with Pierre Poilievre's P-O-I-L-I-E-V-E-R-V-R-E, opposition Conservatives in public perception of their ability to handle immigration," a survey found. And this is by Nicholas King, K-E-U-N-G, senior immigration reporter. "The Liberal Party has restored some Canadians' confidence in their ability to manage immigration, though a majority still believe the Conservatives are better equipped to fix the beleaguered system, according to a new poll. A year after implementing some systemic policy changes to reduce immigration intakes, the Liberals are closing the gap with the opposition. Conservatives in public perception of their ability to handle a system, what many view as, in quotes, broken," said the Abascus data survey, published on the eve of the release of Ottawa's 2026 through 2028 immigration level plan on Tuesday. Overall, 38% of Canadians favored the Conservatives to stick handle this issue, compared to 29% for the Liberals. However, the Liberals' score has risen 13 percentage points on that question in the past year, while those expressing confidence in the Conservatives grew by 4 percentage points, said the poll for the Toronto Star. In quote, "It does show how much former Prime Minister Justin Trudeau affected people's perceptions," said David Coletto, Abascus chair and CEO, in quotes. "Now that he's gone and the government has continued to follow through on that more restrictive immigration policy, they've kind of returned to a more normal place." Liberal Mark Carney became Prime Minister in March. Rapid population growth as a result of high immigration dominated political debates over the last 2 years, and public concerns about lagging housing, healthcare, and other social services has prompted the Liberal government to make drastic cuts in the admissions of both permanent and temporary residents, including foreign students and workers. Immigration applicants are also faced with backlogs and long processing times. While 49% of Canadians virtually unchanged from 50% last November, continue to view immigration through a negative lens, attitudes have largely stabilized, said Coletto, with 26% of people expressing positive feelings towards immigration in Canada. Sentiment remains most negative among older Canadians and conservative voters, while younger Canadians and liberal supporters are more positive about immigration. Despite the lower permanent resident intake from 500,000 in 2024 to 385,000 this year, 67% of people still said the target is too high. That percentage was down modestly from 72% a year ago. In quotes, heading into a budget that will set a new immigration plan, the government is navigating a delicate balance, said Coletto. In quotes, Canadians continue to see immigration through the lens of scarcity. Too few homes, too much strain on public services, and a labor market that feels stretched. The public pressure is clearly on restraint, not expansion. When asked about the impact of immigration, majorities continue to link it to rising housing costs, 69%, pressure on healthcare, 60%, and strain on social services, 58%, all largely unchanged from 2024. Yet, there are modest declines in the share saying immigration is bad for Canada. 51% now say it makes the country worse off, down from 53% last year. Canadians still recognize immigration's benefits. 35% of people said immigrants help fill labor shortages, 26% said they contribute to the economic growth, and 24% said they support an aging population. In quotes, I don't foresee immigration dissipating as an issue that's salient to a lot of Canadians or getting back on the road to building consensus again on this, Coletto said. In quotes, this is going to require some of those pain points like housing, access to health care. People need to believe that those things are improving before they're going to be open to welcoming more people into the country again. The survey interviewed 2,922 Canadians from October 24th to October 29th with a margin of error of 1.81 percentage points, 19 times out of 20. The data was weighed according to a census data to ensure that the sample matched Canada's population according to age, gender, and region. The Abascus survey findings were consistent with the recent Environmentics Institute poll that found 56% of Canadians believe that the country accepts too many immigrants, declining 2 percentage points from last year after a dramatic increase in negative sentiments between 2022 and 2024. Nicholas Ching, KEUNG, is a Toronto-based reporter covering immigration for The Star. This next article is titled, What We Know About Mark Carney's Build Canada Homes and the Plan to Put Factory-Built Housing at Downsview. Downsview was already the site of a massive housing vision. This is what's changing. And there's a picture with two people, and it says workers and people in the background. And it says, workers look on from a modular home under construction as Prime Minister Mark Carney speaks at an announcement for the new federal agency, Build Canada Homes, with Minister of Housing and Infrastructure Gregor Robertson Wright in Ottawa on Sunday, September 14th, 2025. And this article is by Victoria Gibson, affordable housing reporter. With $13 billion to spend across the country, new federal housing agency Build Canada Homes has lined up its first project in Toronto, setting its sights on creating a factory-built housing development at Downsview. Formerly occupied by an airport, the expansive Downsview grounds were already the site of a development vision for 15 new neighborhoods, housing some 115,000 new residents, and a coordination between City Hall, the federal government, and major landowner Northcrest Developments. Before Build Canada Homes, BCH, those plans were already advancing, with the federal government not long ago welcoming expressions of interest for a land lease on one of its properties in the area. So what changes for Downsview now that Mark Carney's Liberals have rearranged the housing their housing strategies? That's just one of the many questions circling Build Canada Homes as federal officials launch their new housing approach in the face of a struggling home building sector. The exact criteria for builders to work on BCH projects is not yet known, nor are the specifics of the financial support it will offer. Build Canada Homes funding also isn't yet guaranteed, as it remains contingent on the Liberals managing to pass their upcoming budget in a minority parliament. But early promises have included a focus on made in Canada materials, innovative home building methods, and on boosting the country's nonprofit housing stock. As the sweeping housing crisis leaves Canadians grasping for more affordable homes, the Star took a closer look at what we know so far about the new approach and what it could mean for Toronto. What is Build Canada Homes? Build Canada Homes is a new agency within the federal government tasked with expediting housing projects, first floated by Mark Carney's Liberal Party during the last election campaign. It was given an initial $13 billion to spend on financing, incentivizing, and overseeing housing developments. As part of that work, it has been given access to public land that was previously managed by a federal crown corporation, the Canada Lands Company. The idea is for the new agency to oversee and lead construction projects for mixed-income developments that offer a combination of affordable rental and market-priced units. The agency will be able to partner with private market developers, but will also focus on increasing nonprofit housing. $1 billion of its allowance has been earmarked for supportive and transitional housing, types of affordable housing meant to help individuals with more acute needs get back on their feet after homelessness. The new agency will be led by former Toronto councillor and mayoral candidate Anna Bailao, B-A-I-L-A-O, as CEO. There's 6 initial projects in Toronto, Ottawa, Winnipeg, Edmonton, as well as Dartmouth, NS, and Longueuil, Quebec, have a combined target of 4,000 new housing units. How is this approach different? Speaking at a modular housing summit in Toronto in October, Federal Housing Minister Gregor Robertson acknowledged that federal government has long talked about using public land to create new homes, but suggested a longstanding problem was officials and agencies moving too sluggishly. In quotes, "We have to speed that up," Robertson told summit host and urban planner Jennifer Keesmaat, K-E-E-S-M-A-A-T. Part of the BCH effort will involve creating a steadier stream of orders for manufacturers of factory-built and prefabricated housing, allowing the industry to ramp up in Canada and increase its capacity to pump out more units. Robertson also stressed a goal of using more materials produced in Canada. He also vowed BCH would focus on increasing the supply of, in quotes, non-market housing, and would make financial support available to home builders earlier in the development process than would be possible when projects are financed via the Canada Mortgage and Housing Corp, CMHC. The idea, he said, was to finance projects at the, in quotes, front end of development rather than deeper into the planning process, as happens under existing CMHC programs. He framed the approach as especially helpful with factory-built housing, where components are constructed off-site before being transported and assembled on the property. In quotes, "A lot of projects can't wait, and certainly not with modular or off-site components," Robertson said. In quotes, that's how bad the modular industry. The new agency would be able to take more, quotes, risk than CMHC, the minister said. But all BCH's promises are contingent on the government's fall budget passing, he warned. The Star has reported fears among some Liberals that the budget, expected to be unveiled Tuesday, could fail to gain the support it needs. What does BCH mean for Downsview? So, what has changed for Downsview under the new federal structure? On some of its land, not much. A spokesman for Canada's Housing and Infrastructure Department in an email for The Star said any projects that were planned with federal supports on properties managed by the Canada Lands Company were expected to, in quotes, continue as planned under Build Canada Homes. The difference, the statement said, was an increase in available supports and an enhanced focus on factors such as speed and, in quotes, innovation. Build Canada Homes is not eyeing work on all of the Downsview, its first Toronto project, with zero in on one block of its Arbo neighborhood on the west side. The federal government says this block, known as 3A, was previously intended to be given to a third party to develop housing. Instead, Build Canada Homes now intends to oversee a development itself and has started canvassing for a potential design team. The idea is to build 540 new homes with 40% offered at prices affordable to mid-income earners. For the Arbo project, like the other five initial BCH sites across Canada, the federal government is eyeing the use of prefabricated modular or mass timber construction methods. In quotes, that will be a difference, Balio told reporters this month when asked to identify key changes in the Downsview plan since it was selected by her new team at Build Canada Homes. Where else could BCH focus in Toronto? As the new agency ramps up, City Hall has assembled its wish list, hoping to put ideas for housing developments in front of federal decision makers with hopes of securing capital funding and low-cost loans to build. Mayor Olivia Chow's office told The Star the city has a list of 16 housing projects across Toronto that could benefit from support from Build Canada Homes, including four supportive housing projects and 12 mixed-income sites. That includes properties owned by the city and its public housing agency, Toronto Community Housing Corp. We, in quotes, we have created a pipeline of 10,000 possible homes, said TCHC CEO Sean Baird, B-A-I-R-D, in a separate interview in October, noting they had identified opportunities to speed up planned developments like North York's Lawrence Heights or the West End Swansea Mews, as well as spots to add to 6 to 8 story modular infill buildings in neighborhoods such as downtown Alexandria Park. In quotes, we have the land, it's serviced and ready to go. It already has access to infrastructure. There's transit already and social infrastructure. We can get the financing. There's already good programs to get the financing, he said. The missing piece for us is to get a hold of that equity. With files from Van Spur. Victoria Gibson is a Toronto-based reporter for The Star covering affordable housing. You can reach her via email, victoriagibson at thestar.ca. You are listening to a reading of articles and features from the Toronto Star on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. This next article is under personal finance and it states, my credit score is really bad and I worry about being able to rent an apartment. How can I raise it? Credit scores generally range from 300 to 900 and have the same goal, to predict a consumer's likelihood of paying financial obligations over time. And there's a graphic, it's drawn, and it says, Canadians can access their credit reports and scores online for free through Equifax and TransUnion websites. And it's the picture is a Toronto Star illustration using Dreamtime images. And this article is written by Laura Grady, G-R-A-D-Y, personal finance reporter. Question, how can I raise my bad credit score? It's only 305, and I'm worried about I won't be able to rent an apartment. Answer, first, Rest assured, you can definitely raise your credit card credit score, says Julie Kuzmic, KUZMIC, Director of Consumer Advocacy for Equifax Canada, though it will take time. Credit scores generally range from 300 to 900 and have the same goal, to predict a consumer's likelihood of paying financial obligations on time. The higher your credit score, the lower your perceived risk of defaulting on a payment, and the greater your chances of being approved for things like a credit card or even an apartment rental. Landlords are allowed to request a credit check in Canada, though they require your consent. Credit scores are calculated using the information on your credit score, so it's important to verify that the information on your credit on your report is accurate. Canadians can access their credit reports and scores online for free through Equifax, EQUIFAX, and TransUnion, TransUnion websites. According to Equifax, credit scores from 660 to 724 are considered good, 725 to 759 are considered very good, and 760 and up are considered excellent. You get points by using your credit responsibly, such as paying bills on time and keeping the amount of credit you owe low, and you lose points if you have trouble managing your money, such as missing bill payments. Kuzmic says there are a number of possible elements on a credit report that correlate with a future likelihood of missing bill payments and therefore tend to contribute to lower credit score outcomes. These can include previous bankruptcies or consumer proposals, outstanding bills that have been turned over to collection agencies, and legal judgments that are financial in nature, such as unpaid taxes and/or family support payments in arrears. In quotes, the good news is the negative data elements are automatically removed from the credit reports in compliance with applicable legislation, generally after 6 to 7 years, so they cannot impact your credit scores indefinitely, Kuzmic explains. Someone could expect their credit scores may increase over time as any negative information gets closer to, in quotes, expiring, providing the new data reported to the credit bureaus about their accounts is consistently positive, meaning there are no new late payments or negative elements such as collection accounts. The best way to maintain a positive credit score, according to Equifax, is by never missing a bill or credit payment, keeping your balance well below your credit usage limit, and by not applying for too much credit, such as loans. These so-called, in quotes, credit inquiries count towards your credit score, and if there are a lot of them on your credit report, lenders may think you're living beyond your means or in desperate need of cash. At the end of the day, making payments on time is one of the most effective ways to achieve and maintain a solid credit score, Kuzmic says. Although it may take time and patience, you can raise your credit score. And remember that credit scores are not moral or character judgments. They reflect a snapshot in time. Money Coach is a weekly feature that helps Canadians find helpful solutions to personal finance challenges. If you have a question, email Laura at lgrady@thestar.ca. The next article is titled, This Couple Planned a Dream Wedding in a Former Toronto Church. Now they're suing the venue for $35,000 over promises it made about the site's public space. The Imperial Toronto is asking the courts to toss the case, calling the amount the couple is demanding for damages excessive. And there's a picture, and it's the forecourt of a decommissioned heritage church on St. Clair is part of a privately owned, publicly accessible space. A Toronto couple is suing the owner of the location for promising to make changes to the site's adjacent courtyard for their wedding, despite city rules. And this photo is taken by Nick LaChance of the Toronto Star. And this article is written by Mandis Habina, H-A-B-I-B-I-N-I-A, of the City Hall Bureau. A couple is suing a Midtown business for promising to make changes to a public space to host their wedding celebration, even though city rules barred them from making major alterations to the site. Felicia Savizo Munro, SCAVUZZO-MUNRO, and Spyros Otanos, OTHONOS, lawsuit says it was, in quotes, dishonest for the Imperial Toronto, a luxury event venue business, to treat a public courtyard at a former church like a private space, including offering to make changes to the property, according to a statement of claim filed on September 8th. The lawsuit is seeking at least $35,000, the couple's original deposit, as well as damages, including for mental distress and anxiety now that the couple is looking to rebook their wedding at a different venue. In its statement of defense, the Imperial's business owners are asking the courts to toss the case, arguing that because the couple prematurely canceled their wedding before a date they had all contractually agreed on, they're not entitled to get their deposit back. The couple had planned to celebrate their wedding at the decommissioned Heritage Church at 129 St. Clair Ave West in September next year, a place where the Imperial has hosted what it calls, in quotes, luxury events. The courtyard and landscape forecourt of the former church are part of a little-known feature in Toronto called privately owned, publicly accessible spaces, POPS. The spaces are negotiated between the municipality and private developers as part of the latter's development application, so the city, with its limited real estate, can give its growing population new open spaces. The Imperial calls the St. Clair Pops Courtyard its, in quotes, crown jewel on its website and one of several places it offers to rent for everything from, in quotes, intimate dinners to grand celebrations and weddings. As the Star previously reported, the private events have frustrated local residents looking to access the space. Scaviso Munro and Otho's wedding was one such special occasion, which they booked for September 5th, 2026. The couple declined to comment while their case is before the courts. A contract with conditions. The groom and bride-to-be signed a detailed contract in January with the Imperial, owned by Reno and Catherine Perzua, P-E-R-R-U-Z-Z-A, in which the business agreed to make modifications to the open-air courtyard for the wedding. Two key conditions of the contract were for the business to install a glass retractable roof in case of rain and to remove trees from the courtyard to accommodate the 165 planned guests with a dance floor, DJ, band, and podium, according to the court filings. If those conditions weren't met by 1 year from their wedding date, September 5th, they all agreed the couple could cancel, get a refund on their deposit, and no cancellation fees would apply. On July 15th, the city's chief planner sent a letter to the Imperial about violating the rules of the POPS based on complaints about other party private events it hosted, reminding it the courtyard was to be, in quotes, open and accessible to the public 7 days a week, according to a copy obtained by the Star. And there's another picture of this space, and it says a retractable roof and the removal of trees were two conditions of a contract signed to hold a wedding celebration at the courtyard, in the courtyard of 129 St. Clair Ave West. And that photo was taken by Nick LaChance of the Toronto Star. The business can use the courtyard space for cafe or restaurant seating, which also needs city approval, but otherwise, in quotes, the city requires you to remove any objects or barrier and cease holding any events which have the purpose or effect of restricting or discouraging public use or access to the courtyard, in quotes, the letter said. To cut down the trees and install a glass roof on the POPS property would need the city's approval, according to city spokesperson Christy Abraham, adding that the municipality hadn't received any applications for those changes. POPS has limitations. The design of the POPS space is fixed into the original agreement between the city and the developer that set up the space in 2012. Even if the city was consulted, getting approval is not guaranteed. That is something the Perosis, in quotes, knew or ought reasonably to have known, according to the statement of the claim, since they bought the property in 2022 and inherited the POPS's limitations. According to the couple's 160-page lawsuit, the Perosis told Scaviso Munro and Othenos in late July the two conditions in the contract would not be met on time, and instead offered to put up a tent on the POPS and presented a floor plan to accommodate the couple's guest count. Instead, the couple asked for their $18,954 deposit back, money the lawsuit says the Imperial hasn't returned despite repeated demands. The defendants knew, or ought reasonably to have known, that their representations regarding the private use of the courtyard were false, misleading, and made negligently, the claim said, arguing the contract they all signed becomes void and unenforceable, and that they relied upon the Imperial's word, in quotes, to their detriment. Defense calls the claim excessive. In the three-page statement of defense filed October 3rd, the Perosis argued that asking for at least $35,000 is, in quotes, excessive. This is at most a contract dispute about an $18,954 deposit, reads the statement of the defense. Returning the deposit depended upon certain conditions being met by September 5th, but the couple canceled in late July when the Imperial still had time to meet those conditions, according to the defense statement. In quotes, even if there were challenges with a retractable roof, Imperial remained capable of providing reasonable accommodations and alternatives, it continued, adding the couple's early termination based on their own assumptions or research was improper. Private party at POPS. According to the couple's lawsuit, the Perosis gave them a site tour in November 2024 and represented, in quotes, the courtyard as a private space and provided a rental quotation of $15,000 for exclusive use, which included the indoor venue space as well. The Imperial estimated the total cost of the wedding was $63,180, according to receipts included with the lawsuit. In the Perosis statement of defense, there was no specific response to the couple's claims of them exclusively using what's supposed to be a publicly accessible space. In previous statements to the Star from late July, the business denied ever using the POPS exclusively, including preventing public access to the courtyard or instructing anyone to do so on their behalf. In quotes, we remain committed to complying with all city requirements and ensuring that the courtyard remains accessible to the public as intended, in quotes. And there's a picture, and it has tables and chairs and pretty lights, and it says on September 27th, the courtyard was blocked off by a tall fence draped with a black covering to host a wedding anniversary party. At the entrance was a bouncer. Nearby, a city sign tells the public that POPS is, in quotes, available for your enjoyment every day. When a Star reporter approached the courtyard, two women who identified themselves as event planners but declined to share their full names said, in quotes, you can't access it when there's an event, in quotes. The business owners know the paperwork. The star was then escorted off the POPS's walkway by the bouncer and Reno Perzuzzi, who refused to answer the questions. One of the event planners said, in quotes, "We would like you to remove yourself from here. These people don't want you looking at their party." And Mandis Habina is part of the Star City Hall Bureau based in Toronto. You can reach her via email, mhabibina@thestar.ca. This next article is titled, it's under the Blue Jays, and it's Toronto Star Call Out, share your message of pride and thanks for the Blue Jays. Our team gave us hope, joy, and forever memories this season. Share your love for them here. And there's a picture of many Blue Jays fans celebrate the Jays Game 6 win, and the photos by Steve Russell, Toronto Star. And this article is by the Toronto Star staff. The Toronto Blue Jays' historic World Series run concluded last night, ending a gripping season that galvanized the city and the nation. The Star's front page today showed a photo of Vladimir Guerrero Jr., G-U-E-R-R-E-R-O, the last to leave the dugout after the Game 7 loss, with the words, in quotes, "Hearts broken, heads high." He was all of us. Our team, underdogs in the World Series competing against the $350 million Dodgers, came within inches of baseball's ultimate prize. They stunned experts and united the country as they pushed the series to the limit, battling all the way to the extra innings in Game 7 on our home turf. They had us glued to our TVs at home and in bars all over the country for the best, purest, most thrilling entertainment imaginable. They got there with skill and talent and heart and soul, and nothing but sheer crap luck kept them from taking it all. If the Jays had won, the joy in the city would have been extraordinary. We don't have that joy today, but our pride in our team is as fierce as it has been all season. We feel their pain because it's our pain too, but we owe them endless thanks for an experience no Jays fan will ever forget. That's why we're asking fans to send us your notes of thanks, support, and love for the team. We'll round them up and post them for other fans, the city, and hopefully the players to see. Send your memories, odes, and thank yous in a few sentences or a paragraph and a pic that shows your support for the Jays to this email, together@thestar.ca, or in the comment section below. You have been listening to a reading of articles and features from the November 3rd, 2025 issue of the Toronto Star. Your reader has been Judy, and I thank you for listening, and I thank you for being here, and I hope you have an amazing day.